morning, New York Rangers fans, and welcome to episode 136 of the New Ice City Podcast. I'm your host, Vincent Mercogliano of the USA Today Network, and I am welcoming you to this bye week slash all-star break for not only the Rangers, but several other teams around the league are not playing this week, and then a few others will get their bye weeks following the All-Star game in Toronto. But we have reached this lull, this period to regroup, this period to assess, this time when I know a lot of wheels are turning, whether that's in front offices around the league or among the fan bases around the league. As we look ahead to the playoff push, we look ahead to the March 8th trade deadline, which will be a big topic on this week's show, and size up where all of these teams around the league stand. And of course, the focus here on this podcast, as it is every week, will be on the Rangers. So for this week's episode, I considered maybe having a guest. I was thinking about maybe somebody who would talk a little bit about Igor Shesterkin, who is going to the All-Star game, but clearly has not been playing at an All-Star level. And we are certainly going to address that on this week's episode. And I'm probably going to write about it at some point in the coming days. But the more I thought about it, and the more I've seen a lot of the chatter online and just among readers and fans that I've been hearing from recently, there's so many different topics to address. With this being a week where there are no games to analyze, it felt like this would be a perfect time to come back with a mailbag episode. And you guys did not disappoint. I was just having lunch and scrolling through a lot of the questions. A lot of them came in, so thank you guys very much for contributing in that fashion. And I think you guys are hopefully going to be satisfied, hopefully going to enjoy this episode, because we're going to hit on a lot of different topics. But before we get to your questions, I just want to do a quick little opening here on what exactly is going on with the team as they got to this All-Star break and sort of the most relevant news at the time. And there's really no other place to start than actually where we started last week. You know, these podcasts, the idea when we record them is that they'll stand up for a week. And usually I'll try to wait till toward the end of the day, especially if there's news going on, because I want it to be as up to date as possible. But of course, there are times when things happen within a 24-hour period or whatever it might be after we record, and it sort of changes what maybe the message had been or the topic of conversation had been on the podcast very quickly. And that's exactly what happened last week, because we recorded last Thursday, which was the day after I got back from that West Coast trip, and I had just gotten back from watching practice where we saw Philip Hedel on the ice with the Rangers for the first time in almost 3 months. And there was a lot of optimism about, well, hey, look, it looks like maybe this guy has a chance of coming back and playing for the team. That day, Thursday of last week, was, I think, the most optimistic that people around the organization, people around the team, people inside of the locker room were feeling about Hedel's chances of playing again this season. So we record the podcast, we put it out, and then what happens the very next day? Well, there's an optional skate at Madison Square Garden, an option that you knew none of the regular players in the lineup were going to take because they had practiced in full the day before and they were coming off of that long West Coast trip where I know a lot of guys, myself included, were still adjusting to the time difference and all that. So I didn't even go to Madison Square Garden on Friday morning because I knew none of the guys that were playing that night were likely to skate. And that's what it was. It was just a couple of extras, Zach Jones and Jake Lecision, along with Philip Hedel, who took the ice for what is a very routine, sort of not low effort, because they do skate gassers and they do try to do things to keep their stamina up for the guys that aren't playing. But it's really an environment where you're not going to see anything too exciting. You're certainly not going to see any line rushes. You're not going to see them working on specific plays. It's going to be some skill work. It's going to be some skating work. It's going to be some pretty basic stuff just to try to keep those guys as close to game shape as possible. So what we end up finding out is all of a sudden I'm getting text messages. I'm seeing a few tweets. And it doesn't sound like anybody, at least as far as reporters that were there, actually saw what happened. But all of a sudden, the few people that were in the building noticed that Philip Hedel was down on the ice. and that something clearly wasn't right. He was down for, it sounds like, a few minutes from what I've been told. And then I've seen a few pictures and a few images, and it was clear that he was disheveled. He was not in a good state there, and he needed to be helped off the ice. And then quickly, as I'm reaching out and trying to gather more information, it was becoming obvious that there was concern that this was another head injury or at least some kind of a setback from the previous injury that we know that Hedl sustained that kept him out for all of that time. And then in time ended up hearing from a source that, yes, confirmed this was a setback related to his concussion and that this was likely going to put him in a bad spot for the rest of the season. And then by the weekend, the Rangers came out and announced that indeed now, sadly, Philip Hedl's season is over. So I want to start there because that is obviously the most relevant topic around the team right now. And definitely from a human interest element, which we've talked about before, this extends way beyond the importance of any singular game or even any singular season. This is a young man whose life has been severely affected by multiple concussions over the course of his career. And I'll also say this because I know the Rangers publicly are still calling it an upper body injury, and I get it. It's hard for me to just point the finger at them. I find it more alarming, quite frankly, that the league continues to allow every single team, all 32 teams, do this silly upper body, lower body charade, which does not happen if you look at the NFL or Major League Baseball or the NBA. The other major professional leagues in North America all give you more injury information than you get out of the NHL typically. And in this case, I almost find it disrespectful to what Hedl is going through to continue to act like we don't know what it is. I've had players in the locker room. I don't need to name names, but I've had players in the locker room in talking with them about Hedl call it a concussion. So if his own teammates are acknowledging what it is, and we know that head injuries in several contact sports have become more of a concern when you talk about long-term health, when you talk about things that can affect you well after your playing days are done, this is something that we need to shine more awareness on. This is something that we need to talk, I think, more openly about and to sort of try to keep it in the shadows in this regard. Again, it's not just the Rangers. Every team in the league does this. And for some reason, the NHL has allowed it. It's sort of become this unwritten rule among all teams where they like to play these games when it comes to injuries. And if there's a specific injury that you're worried about an opposing team targeting, maybe in a playoff series or something like that, and you want to be a little secretive about it in that situation, okay, fine, I get it. But in a situation like this, this is a young man who is going through something that's very difficult. And he said that. If you guys saw his Instagram post a few nights ago, he said this has been the most difficult 3 months of his life. So I feel like, you know what, to show a little respect for what this guy is going through, we can acknowledge that he's going through symptoms and lingering effects from multiple concussions. And that is why he cannot play anymore this season. So just wanted to get that off my chest a little bit too. But as far as Hedl the person, I've written about this. I wrote a column about this the other day. LoHUD.com/sports/Rangers among the other USA Today Network sites is where you can find it. But I think some of it bears repeating here. For me, in my time covering this team, this is now my fifth season, Hedl's been one of the guys who I've probably observed closest because he's been here all five seasons. I've sort of seen him go from my first season where 2019, a lot of you will remember, to begin that season, he was cut out of training camp and sent down to Hartford, even though he had been on the NHL roster the previous season, I think the previous two seasons for different points. And yet he was sent down to Hartford and didn't complain, didn't pout about it. By all accounts, put his head down, went to work, and within a month or so was right back with the NHL team and has been a fixture in their lineup ever since. And that immediately struck me as a guy who didn't go about this by feeling sorry for himself or complaining about ice time or things of that nature. This is a guy who was going to do whatever it took to realize his dreams of playing, not just playing in the NHL. This is a guy who thinks highly of his ability, and I mean that in a confident, positive way, and puts in probably a higher level of work than I would say most of the players that I've covered in my time doing this. His work ethic, his commitment to doing everything on and off the ice that he can to maximize this time in his life where he can play professional hockey has always struck me as a guy who he goes above and beyond. Obviously, as I wrote the other day, every player who reaches this level has to have a certain level of talent and has to have a certain level of work ethic. So that goes without saying. I marvel at what all of these players do on a daily basis. But Hedl, whether it's the extra work that you see him put in on the ice, and I've said this before, I'll say it again. A lot of times when I'm there for practice, you see him often being one of the first guys on the ice and very often being one of the last guys off the ice. Just to give you guys a glimpse of our day-to-day and what I observe and what I see, the way that it works for us when we cover a practice, we'll watch the practice will end at a certain point. And most guys end up staying on the ice after the practice to just work on whatever it is that they want to work on that day. You see guys doing shooting drills. You see guys doing skill work. A lot of times you see the centers working on faceoffs. You'll see goalies, especially the goalies that might not be playing the next day, staying on to take some extra shots, whatever it might be. But other guys, as it goes on, will trickle off. And the policy is that 5 minutes after the first guy leaves the ice, the locker room will open for the media to then enter. And that's where we go when we chat with different guys and we do our interviews that we need for whatever stories we're working on at the time. And we'll generally spend 20, 30 minutes in the locker room. Well, very often when we would leave the locker room after that 20, 30 minutes was up, you'd come out and you find sometimes a few guys, 3, 4, 5. Sometimes it would be one guy alone. And a lot of times the last guy out there was Philip Hedl. This guy obsessively worked on every aspect of his game. Definitely a guy who you could just see was committed to doing everything that he could and working on every aspect of his game, especially a lot of the skill work, because this is a highly skilled player. And that always is something that stood out to me. But beyond that, this is also a guy who I know is meticulous about his diet, what he puts in his body, the foods that he eats, especially in season, especially as he's ramping up for games. Just in having conversations with him over the years, this is a guy who has studied all the best foods to put in his body, what to avoid, what can help him maximize his performance, and has put a lot of thought into that area as well. His workout routine, really strong kid. I mean, his legs are just jacked. This is a guy who I know has a pretty intense workout regimen as well. And then on top of all of that, just a little more behind the scenes for you guys, I'm pretty sure this has been out there before, but the media every year votes on what we call the Good Guy Award. And that is the guy who is most accessible, who seems to just get it and understand that it's important to be accountable. It's important to be there to answer reporters' questions, who's most cooperative with the media. And this is a guy who English is not his first language, but his English has gotten really good over the years. We've seen him out in front and a guy who is very, I think, straightforward and candid when it comes to, number one, addressing the own parts of his game. And this is a guy who, again, highly motivated. I remember, and I've been thinking back to this a lot in the last few weeks, a conversation that I had with him in the preseason where he talked about when he was getting that second line look with Artemi Panarin, which is an opportunity that I know him and a lot of other players have always wanted to have. And I asked him about, you must feel good about this. This is showing that the new coaching staff has a lot of trust in you and you finally earned this spot. And his response was, nothing comes to me for free. Just because I have this spot now doesn't mean I'm guaranteed it tomorrow. So for me, this makes me have to work even harder to make sure that I keep this spot, that I keep getting better, because I know that I'm only scratched the surface of my potential. And we saw him break out in those 2022 playoffs when the Rangers went on that run to the Eastern Conference Finals. He was, to me, probably the biggest breakout star for them on that playoff run. And he parlayed that into his best regular season yet last year. But in talking to him, he didn't feel like he accomplished anything. He felt like, okay, I scored 22 goals last year, but I can do better than that. I need to do better than that if I'm really going to be a fixture in the top six, if I'm really going to accomplish my goals in this league. So always a guy who is pushing himself, always a guy who was accountable, and a guy who delivered some messages, even at only 23, 24 years old, from a team perspective about things that he thought the team needed to do better too. So we voted him as the Good Guy Award winner last year because he was a guy who was just very accessible, very accountable, and I felt like stood up and answered some of the tough questions in a very refreshingly honest way. So a guy that getting to know him in the last 5 years, it's hard not to pull for him. It's hard not to feel for him right now because I've seen the hard work that he's put in. I've seen his commitment. I've seen how much he loves this game, how passionate he is for doing everything that he can to make the most out of his opportunity as an NHL player. And that makes it even more heartbreaking to see what he's going through right now. So again, from the human element, putting the hockey stuff aside, knowing how much he loves this game, knowing how much this means to him, that makes witnessing what he's going through right now even more difficult. And it also makes it not surprising that both the Rangers and Filip Hedl are now very publicly saying that he's aiming to come back next season for the 24-25 season. I know we're all hoping he can do that. I know there's a lot of doubt out there. I have doubts. I have concerns. I certainly don't want to see him jeopardize his long-term health. But as I wrote the other day, that's up to him. That's a decision for him to make in his own time, obviously in consultation with the Rangers and in consultation with doctors. But I don't find it anybody else's place to come out, whether you're online or wherever you are, and say, oh, this guy's got to be done, or call him soft or anything stupid like that. Give him his space. Let him work through this on his own time. And let's all hope for the best for him, whether that means he's playing next year or, more importantly, just getting his life on track, getting his health on track. I've heard about him having issues with sensitivity to light and vision problems and all kinds of stuff. This is scary, scary stuff that he's going through. So let's hope the best for him. And let's definitely hope that we see him on the ice again, because that would be a heck of a comeback story. But again, first and foremost, heart goes out to him. And I know me, all of his teammates, everybody in the organization, their hearts have been heavy recently. And I know it's been the same for a lot of fans. So I'm sure a lot of you are having similar thoughts. And I want to start with that, because that's obviously the most important thing that's going on right now. Now we can sort of turn the page and look ahead, because we have a lot of Rangers stuff to digest. We're again at this All-Star break. You've got Vincent Trocheck and Igor Shesterkin, as well as head coach Peter Laviolette, going to Toronto to represent the Rangers there. Igor, we're going to talk about him, I think, later in this episode, so I won't dissect that too much. I will say this about Trocheck. Artemi Panarin, hands down, everybody agrees, is the team MVP up to this point. It's hard to figure where the Rangers would be without him. But with Panarin and his wife expecting their second child and him sort of bowing out of consideration for this All-Star game, I don't think there's a better second choice on this team than Trocheck, who has just made such an important all-around impact for the Rangers this season. And just in talking to him after he found out that he was getting that invite to go to the All-Star game, the fact that he's going 7 years now after his first selection, this will be the first time he's going as a father. He's got two kids now. He's bringing his whole family to Toronto. Good for him. This is an exciting time for him and his family. I know his older son, Leo, who I believe he said is 5 years old, is really looking forward to the experience. So cool thing for Trocheck, and very much well-deserved. As for the team, listen, they really needed that win that they got in Ottawa on Saturday night. You hope that that can propel them to better things in the month of February, which is really going to be a critical month for this team to get itself back on track. It seemed like they broke out all of a sudden in that second period against the Senators, end up winning that game 7-2. So maybe, just maybe, that's what they needed to start feeling good about themselves again. I'm sure they feel a lot better going into this long layoff, having come off a win versus a loss. Had they lost that game, it would have been really dreary around here, because even with winning that game, I believe it's 5 of 14 games is all that they won in the month of January. And if you go back to that December 5th cutoff that we've talked about so many times, they've only won 12 of 26 games since December 5th. So still a team that's having a lot of inconsistencies, still a team that has a lot of flaws that we've talked about and dissected in recent weeks, and we'll probably talk about a little more in this episode. But the overall spot where they're sitting, 30-16-3 now, going into this All-Star break. Still first place in the Metro Division, third place overall in the Eastern Conference. in strong position to make the playoffs. Their odds of making the playoffs are still like 98%. So still a team that is in really strong position overall. And if they come out of this break and play better, get back at least closer to what we saw earlier in the season, then maybe this extended slump that they've had becomes more of an afterthought. Now, if they come out and stumble again, then the questions and the concerns get louder and louder, even louder than they are right now. And you really start to question whether this is a Stanley Cup caliber team. So they're at a crossroads for this moment, no doubt about it. But again, you look at where they're at in the standings and you still feel like, well, a lot of teams would like to be where the Rangers are sitting right now, and they still control their own destiny moving forward. So with that, I want to shift gears and get to our Twitter questions, because there's a lot of topics that I'm sort of wanting to talk about right now, and I'm controlling myself because I know we're going to get to them there. So let's get into this week's set of Twitter questions right after this short break. All right, sleeves are rolled up and we are going to dive right in. And we will start with this question from Eric Voss, who wrote, "Seems to be another push for big names forced to fit in the lineup again this deadline. Are the Rangers better served trying to acquire multiple players to fill obvious voids like speed, forechecking, clearing the net front?" So this sort of big picture philosophy, and I saw there were a few questions in here along those lines, is where I wanted to start. And I think it's an important conversation to have. Now, we can talk about what the Rangers should do versus what they will do, and that's part of this as well. And a lot of what I'm going to be talking about here is what, based on my reporting, I believe they will do. And I've been consistent about this. I've been on a few shows this week where I've been asked a similar question. And I also addressed this in my column from Monday, which again, I would encourage everybody to go read, because I hit a lot of different topics related to Philip Hedel and what losing him means to the Rangers and how it affects their trade deadline plans and all of that. But the crux of it is the Rangers in the position where they are in. I get why people are saying that if you look at these last 26 games and how much they've been up and down and how inconsistent and how it hasn't looked at all like a team that is really Stanley Cup caliber for long stretches within those 26 games, that that causes alarm, that makes you scratch your head and wonder, is it worth giving up future assets to try to fortify this roster when we feel like this roster is flawed and even with a few additions might not be good enough to win at all? It's not an invalid question. It's a very fair question, but I would counter by saying this, and I know that this is what the Rangers are thinking internally. There are a few important factors to consider about why I believe that they will be, yet again, as we've seen the last few years, aggressive at the trade deadline. And it starts with this. I've heard this from a few people, and my own logic has been telling me this for years. I remember specifically writing a column about this. I think it was like a year and a half ago, right after they locked up Vincent Trocheck over that summer, where they decided to stretch themselves pretty much as tight against the cap as they could to fit that one final long-term big contract in with the core that they had already mostly locked up to those extensions. And that is, now the Rangers have essentially made their bed. There was a period when Chris Drury first got promoted where I do believe the Rangers were exploring some options as far as bringing in other big impact star level players to add to this core. And the most notable name, the name that I believe they chased the hardest and thought that they had a legitimate chance of getting, was Jack Eichel. I've written about this before. That broke down for a variety of reasons, but it sounds like Buffalo, specifically the Sabres ownership, was not thrilled about the idea of sending him to the Rangers. And every time that the Rangers thought they were close on a deal, from what I was told, the finish line kept getting moved. And then eventually it became clear to them this deal isn't going to happen, or at least they weren't willing to pay the exorbitant price that it would have required to make it happen. And we know what happens. Eichel ends up in Vegas. Once that happened, once that domino fell, I believe that the Rangers looked around, and especially given the way that some of their top players, their star level players, were performing at the time, you saw what Chris Drury did by handing out certain extensions. He extends Adam Fox. He extends Igor Shesterkin. He extends Mika Zibanejad. He goes out and decides that Vincent Trocheck was the guy that he wanted to lock up as their second line center when they had a few other options, including retaining Ryan Strome. And prior to Drury being here, part of that mold had already been set for him by Jeff Gorton, who signed Chris Kreider to an extension, went out and traded for Jacob Trouba and gave him a big extension. And of course, the biggest one was signing Artemi Panarin in free agency. The internal discussions at the time that they signed Panarin were this. This is a guy who is going to not change the rebuild plans, but certainly accelerate the rebuild plans, because this is a guy who is older than obviously a lot of the players that they were drafting and bringing in at the time. Still not super old. He was in his late 20s at that point. But this is a guy whose prime is now. And by signing him, that is basically committing that we believe we can win sometime in the prime area of this 7-year contract that they gave him. And you saw them sort of act accordingly. That's why they got Trouba. That's why they made a lot of the moves that they made around that time. But those guys, specifically those 7 players that I just named, who now account for over 60% of their salary cap space, they made their bed with this core. And they've committed very much to this core being a core that they believe is championship caliber. We've seen them prove that they are playoff caliber. They've made the playoffs 2 years in a row. They're on their way now for a third year in a row. But of course, we know the ultimate goal is to end that Stanley Cup drought that is now about to hit 30 years. And clearly, by deciding that they were going to allocate such a large portion of their salary caps to those players, and then also going and giving a long-term contract to a guy like Barclay Gaudreau, which tightened that even more, we've seen that the Rangers have committed now to this group. This is the group that they have decided they're going to build around. Of course, an important part of that equation was developing young players, drafting and bringing up prospects. Lafreniere, Kako, Schneider, Hedl, Keandre Miller. So those guys are a key point of this as well. And the development in a lot of those cases has not gone as planned. We've had injuries cause issues there, specifically with Hedl and obviously with Kako missing significant time again this year. But the main thing for this group to be successful, a big part was developing those young players and having them emerge as impact players, roles players to surround that veteran core. But the veteran core is going to fall on their shoulders more than anybody else to lead this team to the promised land. And you look at this veteran core who the Rangers have committed to, almost all of them are 30 years old or older. Panarin and Kreider are 32 now. They'll be 33 next season. Zibanejad, Trocheck, Trouba is about to turn 30. All these guys are 30 or older. And so their primes are right now. Kicking the can down the road to next season or a couple seasons from now, you are increasing the odds of diminishing returns from those guys. So the opinion that I've heard from others and the opinion that I've come to on my own is that this core waiting does not suit them. That is not in their best interest. You've committed financially and in terms of long-term contracts to all of these players. And waiting till next year probably doesn't put those guys in a better position to win. So will it come to a point where maybe we decide this core isn't good enough? We talked about this a bit on last week's episode. Yes, if they flame out in these playoffs again, if they disappoint again this season, I think that's going to be a very real conversation this offseason. But right now, this is what the Rangers have to work with. This is what they are going for it with. And this is a first place team that they have with these guys. So with that in mind, I do not believe that they are going to just let all those guys get another year older and decide, we're not that great this year, even though we're in first place, and we're just going to wait and see and maybe try again next season. No, they are trying right now. This is a win now situation. Absolutely. And then look at the history. Look at what's happened in this franchise in the last 3 years. The owner, James Dolan, completely turned the franchise on its head, stunned almost everybody when he abruptly fired team president John Davidson, and general manager Jeff Gorton, who was very much the architect of the rebuild. Why did he do that? Because the Rangers weren't winning at the level that he expected them to be winning at that point. Was it impatient? Was it rash? Yes, I believe so. But clearly the mandate from the top was that we need to push this thing forward. We need to win more. We need to go for it right now. And what have you seen Chris Drury do since he took over this job? Everything that he has done since he took over this job has been about winning right now. All of the moves that he made his first offseason were about that. And look at his last couple trade deadlines. He has absolutely gone for it the last couple trade deadlines. 13 trades in the time leading up to the previous two trade deadlines. Last year, he went out and bent over backwards to get Patrick Kane and Vladimir Tarasenko and bring in all of these guys to make this roster, this star-studded, what they believed championship-caliber roster. So I find it very hard to believe that based on that history and based on the point in their career where a lot of the core players on this team are at, that the Rangers are just going to decide right now that they are not really going to go for it this year. They're just going to dip their toe in or they're not going to be aggressive. I believe, and this is what I'm hearing as well, that they are absolutely going to be aggressive at this trade deadline. And again, I'll reiterate this point. Look at where they are at in the standings. Even though they've struggled mightily in a lot of ways in this last month or so, and we've talked about the concerns with defending against the rush, we've talked about the concerns with their penchant for playing too east-west and resulting in a lot of turnovers. We've talked about the five-on-five offense being inconsistent outside of that Panarin, Trocheck, Lafreniere line. And a new problem, perhaps the most concerning problem recently, has been the goaltending. And Igor Shesterkin now going into this All-Star break with an .899 save percentage. So all of those things are red flags, absolutely. But also consider this. Had the Rangers gotten slightly better goaltending out of Igor Shesterkin in these last 26 games, would they have only won 12 of them? You have to believe they probably would have won at least a few more. And you have to believe, given Igor's history, that at some point he will, you hope, at least find his way out of this slump again. I'm sure we're going to talk a little bit more about that later on in the show. But there are reasons to believe that the Rangers are at least a little bit better than what we've seen in some of these bad losses in the last month or two. So sitting in first place, third overall in the conference, which, by the way, look at the Eastern Conference right now. There is not a clear powerhouse in this conference right now. The Boston Bruins have the best record in the conference. The Rangers have beaten them both times that they've played them. So you're not completely intimidated by the Bruins right now. And who else do you look at and say, unequivocally, especially if the Rangers make the right additions at this trade deadline, the Rangers can't compete with in a seven-game series? So I get the notion that selling off assets every year, completely sacrificing draft picks and making your cupboard bare as far as prospects is concerned, that that's an alarming trend. That is not a sustainable way to keep your team at the top of the standings. That is not a sustainable way to build up your pipeline. That's all fair. And so I think you have to be very careful about what you do sacrifice. And I'm not sitting here saying that I think the Rangers are going to completely sell the farm and give up every first round pick and give up all their top prospects or anything of that nature. But I do believe that they are going to aggressively add. And I do believe now, with Hedl being out and the Rangers looking at a projection of $5.2 million at the trade deadline, that you are going to see them try to utilize that space with multiple moves, I believe, is what's coming. Probably at least two forwards, I think, are going to be added at this trade deadline. And while I get the concerns, and we will certainly analyze each deal as far as what they give up and are they giving up too much and are they going to have problems as far as not having enough draft picks and not having enough prospects who would look like impact players coming up the pipeline, all that stuff is fair. And again, we will dissect all of that. But the state that they're in right now, everything that I'm hearing is indicating that they're going to go for it. The recent history tells us absolutely this is a franchise that is mandated to win right now and is going to act accordingly. And I find it hard to really fault that logic when they're sitting in first place and we know that this core is only going to probably diminish as far as what you're getting out of them in the next couple of years versus what you potentially you hope you can get out of them down the stretch going into the playoffs right now. They're in their primes right now. So I do not see the Rangers kicking the can down the road. And from what I'm hearing, that doesn't sound like it's going to be the case anyway. So that would be my point on that. As far as Eric mentioned, you know, filling obvious voids like speed, forechecking, clearing the net front, they want to do all of that. Ideally, they're going to get players that contribute in multiple areas. They certainly want somebody who is going to fit that hard to play against, battle-tested playoff type of hockey. They want someone who's going to defend hard and backcheck and forecheck and get to those high danger areas on the ice. They need more of that in this lineup, I absolutely believe. But I also believe that they need a little more five-on-five scoring punch. So I think they're going to try to do both things. I think they're really going to try to ideally get players who can do both things, or at least get one player who fits one need and one player who fits another. It's not just a matter of adding more skill, and it's not just a matter of adding more grit. I certainly don't think it's just a matter of that. So I think you're going to see a multifaceted approach here. And again, I think you're probably going to see multiple deals. It might not necessarily all have to be big names. There's not even that many big names out there right now. We'll get to some of the names that are out being discussed at the moment in a couple of questions, I think. So I'm not going to go too deep into that right now. They could very well go for more mid-level prospects that they're trading, mid-round draft picks, and get guys who might not be big splashy names necessarily, but will help fill some of those voids that you're talking about. So as far as exactly who they're going to acquire or exactly how much they're going to give up, we don't know that yet. Again, that's something that we'll take as it comes and we'll evaluate as it comes. But are they going to be aggressive? Are they going to make moves? Absolutely. I would be shocked if they don't. All right, let's get to our next question. I'm going to try not to be as long-winded with these next few. And we have one from Hudson, who wrote, do you think the Rangers are targeting rentals or guys who can stick around a little bit longer? Now, I'll say that generally speaking, trade deadline time is when you're going to see a lot more rentals. You're going to see guys on expiring contracts simply because the teams that you're dealing with are going to be most motivated to move the guys who are on expiring contracts so that they get something in return for them as opposed to losing them for nothing in free agency. So I'm always going to think that that is the highest likelihood. Those are always going to be the first guys that I ask about and look at as we're assessing who might be available. But I will say this, as far as the Rangers acquiring guys who have some term, I think it's more feasible for them this year than it has been in years past when we were dealing with a flat salary cap and we knew going into each offseason the Rangers had very little wiggle room and they had some really important players that they had to re-sign. So it was going to be almost impossible for them to trade for guys who they'd also have to consider fitting in the next year. I think this year they have a little more wiggle room, mainly because the salary cap is projected to go up more significantly this season than it has in years. So the projection right now, we're at $83.5 million is the current salary cap ceiling. The projection that Commissioner Gary Bettman put out a couple months ago is they're looking at about $87.7 million for next season. So that is right there going to give you a little more breathing room. And then as I've done my own research, the Rangers, by my calculations and my projections, I believe have about 15 guys who are under contract and we can expect to be on the roster going into next season. Obviously, guys can be traded in the summer and what have you. But just looking at the guys that are under contract right now, there's about 15 guys that I would expect to be there. And that leaves them with a little under $15 million in available salary cap space. And they do have some fairly significant free agents. Ryan Lindgren is one of them. Braden Schneider is one of them. Kaapo Kakko is one of them. So those are guys that you're going to have to re-sign potentially. Could trade them, could let some of them go. I mean, a lot of things could be on the table there. But I don't think any of those guys break the bank. I don't think they're needing to figure for as much money for those guys as they did for some of the guys in the last couple of years that they had to consider re-signing. So I do think it's a little bit more realistic that the Rangers could go out there and acquire a guy with some term. Now, can they go out there and acquire a guy who is due for $6-8 million next season? No, that is not feasible. But could they go out and get a player who is under contract next year for a few million dollars? I think that's possible if it's a guy that they look at and value and view as somebody who fits beyond this season. So to me, I think when you're analyzing potential trades, that is something that you have to take into account a little bit more this season than I did, let's say, the previous two or three. So yes, I do think that guys with terms are a little more feasible right now than they have been. So that might open up a few possibilities. But I also think that the first guys that are going to be most readily available and probably the easiest to get without having to significantly overpay are going to be the guys who are on expiring contracts, just because that's always how these type of things tend to work. Okay, next question comes from UKE Rangers, who wrote, "Are the names reported really who Drury is looking at, or will he be a real creative GM and go for other players? Will it be the same players from previous deadlines? Is he going to really make the team older or better?" So now we'll get into some of the names and some of the rumors that are out there and some of the things that I've been hearing, because I know that is something that a lot of you guys are interested in. And of course, it's fascinating stuff. That's what we all want to talk about at this time of year. I'll start by saying this: as far as the guys that are being reported versus maybe players who are more under the radar, I never discount the possibility that there could be guys that we're not hearing right now or we're not talking about right now who could end up being acquired. The Rangers, especially since Drury took over, have tightened things up, much fewer leaks, I think much harder to get information about exactly what the GM is thinking. I mean, it's not impossible to find out which way the Rangers might be leaning or team philosophies or things of that nature. But when you're talking about a specific name, the Rangers are targeting X, that is something that Drury has, I think, worked very hard to make sure does not come out. Now, there are other ways, whether it's other teams, other agents, people that talk around the league. Obviously, these rumors all get circulated somehow, but the Rangers are notoriously tight-lipped, and I believe that that is something that Drury has made clear is important to him. So it's very possible that he's working on things that we're not hearing about right now. One that comes to mind, for example, a couple of years ago, the Frank Vetrano trade was one that I really had not heard anything about. I think we tend to look at the teams that are out of contention and who might be on expiring contracts on those rosters and that sort of thing. Those are sort of the easy ones to find, the easy stones to uncover when you're looking at potential trade deadline targets. But the Panthers were a team that was very much in playoff contention. And I don't think a lot of people were thinking that Vetrano was a name that was on the Rangers radar. And then lo and behold, they go out and they get him, and they get him for really a steal of a deal. I believe it was a fourth round pick at the time. So something like that happening is absolutely on the table, would not surprise me in the slightest. With all that being said, there are some things that I am hearing, and there are some, I know, things that are being reported by others as well. I think a lot more of the national guys you're starting to see come out and give you some details on what they're hearing, because those guys, as far as being in touch with sources from the league and being in touch with some of the most prominent agents, obviously they're getting a lot of information from those sources. And you know, one that came out over the weekend, which I would throw a little cold water on here, is Sean Monahan from the Montreal Canadiens, who's a center that I've written about already in the past. I know when I did my potential trade targets article in December, he was a name that I put on there because he makes a lot of sense for the Rangers as a potential third line center, which third line center is top priority for the Rangers from what I'm hearing and just from what you can gather by looking at the state of this roster right now. That is the number one position they need to fill. I think center was the number one position they were looking to fill even before Hedl was ruled out for the rest of the season because of the uncertainty about Would he be able to return? And if he did return, what was the chances of a reoccurrence or him maybe having to go out again? So I always think that center for the last number of weeks has been the main position that the Rangers are targeting. And now with Hedl being out, that only increases it. It might mean that they actually try to get two centers potentially, but I think one for sure is going to be coming. And Monahan is a guy who makes some sense, having probably his best season, scoring a lot. I think he has 35 points now at the All-Star break. He's been really productive for Montreal in a lot of ways, a pretty good faceoff guy. The defensive metrics are not good, and the injury history scares you a little bit there, but his $1.9 million price tag certainly would work well for the Rangers. So there's reasons that that could make sense. He would definitely be an upgrade for them at third line center. But what I'm hearing is, number one, Montreal is asking basically everybody for a first round pick for him. And I do not believe that he's the type of player that the Rangers are willing to give up a first round pick for. We talk about what level of assets they're willing to deal. I think it's going to take a really, really big fish for the Rangers to be willing to talk about that first round pick. And there aren't many really big fish out there right now. And I don't think Monahan or some of the other maybe bottom six type of players we're going to discuss rise to that level. So if all things were equal, I don't think that the Rangers would be willing to give up a first-round pick for a player like that. But on top of that, I can tell you that there is validity to a lot of the whispers out there about there not being a great relationship right now between the Rangers front office and the Montreal front office. We know that Jeff Gorton was fired unceremoniously here. We know that some of the people that Drury in the aftermath of that let go have now went and joined Gorton in Montreal. And I talked to a source about this the other day who basically told me that there's some stuff that happened in that whole process that I think rubbed some people on both sides the wrong way. And so I think that that would be a hurdle toward them getting a deal done. Would that prohibit them from getting a deal done? I was told no, but the way that this source phrased it to me was they believe the Rangers would have to pay a premium to get any type of a deal done to convince Montreal to do a trade with them. So if the rest of the league is offering a second round pick and the Rangers are also offering a second round pick, it doesn't sound like they would pick the Rangers. It sounds like the Rangers would have to go above and beyond. And for that reason, I think Monahan is unlikely. A name who there's been a lot of buzz about in my conversations recently is Adam Henrique from the Anaheim Ducks. He's a little bit older, 33 years old. The foot speed is a question mark, but he's been productive for a bad Anaheim team. And he is a very responsible, sound two-way center, which I believe the Rangers want. They don't want a guy who's only going to contribute offensively. They don't want a guy, I think, who's just going to be a defensive type of center who doesn't score any points, at least not for that third line role. Maybe for a fourth line role, they would look at a guy like that, but not a third line role. But Henrique, I think, checks those boxes as far as being that 200-foot player that we hear the Rangers talk about all the time. His salary is high, $5.8 million. So even with that 5.2 that the Rangers have available, they would certainly need Anaheim to eat some of his salary, retain some of that to get that deal done. But Henrique is a guy who I do believe the Rangers have interest in, and a couple sources have mentioned to me as a guy to keep an eye on. Now, he's another one of those guys. I don't think he rises to that level where you'd be willing to give up a first-round pick or a really premium prospect. The one guy who I have believed now for well over a month, even before this recent news about Hedl, that the Rangers are keeping tabs on and would really make them as strong as possible, at least as far as the names that are out there right now down the middle, is Elias Lindholm from the Calgary Flames, who are definitely one of those teams that a lot of people are expecting to be sellers. Lindholm and Henrique are the two names that in recent weeks I've heard the most about as far as the Rangers potentially having interest. And Lindholm is a guy who definitely could, I think on pretty much any team, a lot of teams for sure, be a top six center. He's been that for Calgary. This is a guy who defensively is considered one of the best centers in the league. He's finished in the top 10 voting for the Selke Trophy, which goes to the NHL's best defensive forward three times in his career. So that shows you what his reputation is defensively around the league. A strong faceoff guy, an excellent defensive forward, and also a guy, his points are down a little bit this year, but that situation in Calgary is pretty messy. But for the length of his time with the Flames, which I think is like 5 or 6 seasons now, he's been close to a point per game player. So also a guy offensively that brings a lot to the table. He would check the most boxes of all the guys, at least, again, the guys that are being speculated about right now, the guys who we believe will be traded at the deadline. Lindholm is the guy who I think the Rangers very much would like to have. And if you stick him on that third line, that makes this lineup down the middle with Zibanejad, Trocheck, and Lindholm look really strong. That would make the center position a strength for the Rangers. I'm not sure how many teams can go 3 deep to that level, have a potential Selke Trophy guy, a guy who's finished, I think, at least once in the top 3 in that voting as your third line center. That would be a really good get for the Rangers. The problem there is going to be the competition is fierce, and it's definitely going to cost you a first round pick, I believe, and then some. So are the Rangers willing to go to that length? And how many other teams are willing to go to that length? So that is a question there, a very legitimate question. It might end up being too rich for the Rangers' blood, but he's a guy to keep on the radar. Again, to me, Henrique and Lindholm are the guys that I've heard the most about as far as centers that the Rangers might be targeting at this point. There's a lot of other names that are going to be floated. They're certainly, as the original question touched on, could be guys that we're not hearing about right now. I'm sure there are some that the Rangers are looking into. But I would also just add this, as far as a couple teams that might have a few different guys who could be of interest that I think there could be a connection to and I've heard that we should keep an eye on. One of them is the San Jose Sharks, who Anthony Duclair is definitely a guy that if you're looking to add some speed and some scoring at the right wing position, which I think is priority number 2 for the Rangers at this trade deadline. Duclair is a guy that we've talked a bit about from San Jose, but there's some other guys as far as probably relatively cheap bottom 6 type of players who the Rangers wouldn't have to give up a whole lot to get, who I think could come into play if you look at that San Jose team. And we know there's a connection there as far as the Sharks general manager, Mike Greer, who has a longstanding relationship with Chris Drury dating back to their BU days. And we know worked in the Rangers front office for a short amount of time under Drury. So there's pretty obviously the potential for a deal between those two. And then the other team that intrigues me a lot is the Seattle Kraken. And they're kind of hovering right now in that Western Conference playoff picture. I believe they're 2 points out of a playoff spot right now. So it's not even a sure thing that they're going to be sellers. But if they do decide to be sellers, the Kraken have 3, 4, maybe even 5 forwards that you could make a case for would really be intriguing as potential additions. That's one of those teams, along with the Sharks, that you could look at and say, well, maybe the Rangers could do a 2-for-1 type of deal with a team like that, make a trade where they get 2 forwards back in return and sort of kill 2 birds with 1 stone. And the Kraken, whether it's Jordan Eberle, whether it's Tomas Tatar, who's a guy who has had kind of a weird season starting in Colorado and then going and getting traded to Seattle when it didn't work out with the Avalanche, but was really effective in previous spots and burned the Rangers with the Devils a few times, if you remember back to last season. Alex Weinberg is a center who's on an expiring contract for them. And the guy who might be the most intriguing to me from the Seattle Kraken is Yanni Gourde, who a lot of people will remember won 2 Stanley Cups with the Tampa Bay Lightning, was on that line that got a lot of attention with Barclay Gaudreau and was considered, I think, much more of a play driver on that line than Gaudreau was. A center who would look really, really good in a third line type of role. I think he's exactly the player the Rangers want to get as far as playoff, battle tested, plays a 2-way game, can contribute offensively, does all of those things. The one thing with him is he's under contract, not just this season, but next season as well for $5.1 million. So that would be tricky. The Rangers might have to figure out a way to ask Seattle to retain a little bit of that salary at least. I mean, Seattle's in a great salary cap situation. So if any team can afford to do that, it's them. And so Seattle, if we see them dipping in the standings in the next few weeks, that's another team that I would be, if I was Chris Drury, very interested in talking to. And I think a lot of other people are wondering if that might be a team that ends up ultimately deciding to sell. So we could list off a lot of different names here. I've written about a handful of them. You can go and read more if you check out my most recent column. But as far as what I'm hearing the most about right now, where the buzz is and where my eyes are turning a little bit at this moment, both because of what I'm hearing and also just because of what I think seems the most interesting and where I think there are the most connections. Some of those things that we went over is where I would look first and foremost. All right, let's get to our next question, which comes from quite a few people. This is honestly probably the most asked question of the week. A few people in here who I see that asked about this particular topic are Zando Blando, Greg Venuto, James. So a lot of people are asking this question, and it's probably, again, I think the question that we got asked about the most this week, so we might as well do it. And that relates to Capo Caco, who Darren Drager came out with a report night or two ago, I want to say it was, where he said that the Rangers are, I believe, quote, listening on offers for Capo Caco. And a lot of people want to know how realistic is it that the Rangers might deal Capo Caco at this trade deadline. And I have definitely a few things that I want to say on this particular topic. Caco is on an expiring contract, but he's an RFA. So the Rangers still have control over this player. He does have arbitration rights, but this is a guy who, especially when it comes to arbitration type of stuff, you know, they're going to look at a lot of the traditional stats like points. This is not a guy who's going to have a high points total this year. We know he missed a chunk of time with injury. It's not going to cost the Rangers a lot to retain him. And so keeping a player who is low cost under team control beyond this season makes a lot of sense. So I don't think that the Rangers are going to bend over backwards to try to trade this guy in this moment. Now, would it shock me that the Rangers are listening on deals for him? Absolutely not. I think the Rangers are willing to listen on deals for pretty much anybody, maybe outside of the tippy top of this roster, Adam Fox, Igor Shesterkin, Artemi Panarin, who Panarin we know has a no movement clause, among other guys. So I think that the Rangers are probably willing to listen on anybody. I don't think Chris Drury is hanging up on anybody. So the language within that report, I think, is important. Listening to offers for him versus shopping, I think, is much different. And when you consider the fact that his numbers are not good this year, his points totals and things of that nature, and you look at what's happened recently where Peter Laviolette once again moved him down in the lineup, which probably signaled to other teams the Rangers aren't thrilled with how he's playing right now, other teams smell blood in the water. So of course you're going to have other general managers making phone calls about this player. Now, do I sense that the Rangers aren't thrilled with how he's playing? Yes, we just talked about that. Peter Laviolette, I think, in my opinion, moved him down pretty quickly. That was a pretty quick, I think, pulling the rug out from underneath him coming off of that injury. He only played about 5 or 6 games on that top line with Zibanejad and Kreider, and then very quickly got demoted. And I've said this on the podcast before. I felt like the best thing the Rangers could do for him coming out of this injury, this long layoff that he had with that left leg injury, was to staple him to that top line, let him play there for at least a few weeks leading up to the trade deadline, and seeing if they can finally make those positive analytics that we know they have when they're together turn into some real tangible results, and give him that extended time to not look over his shoulder, because I do think that is part of what is going on here. I do believe, even from talking to Caco, that there's a little bit of this like, well, you know, I'm not getting to stay in this spot. I'm constantly looking over my shoulder. Not that he's saying this directly. This is just the sense that I'm getting from him. But I do think that there is a little bit of a wondering when the shoe's going to drop, as opposed to just allowing him to be comfortable in one role. And so that, I think, is part of this as well. But the long-term future for him here, I think, is reasonable to question, because the reality is that he has not seized these opportunities. He has still not popped to the level that everybody expected from a guy who is drafted as highly as he was. And could there come a point where the Rangers consider trading him? I believe that's very much true. But my stance on this is those deals are always, I think, more likely to happen in the offseason. I think if you see real shakeups happening, which could definitely happen on this roster this summer, it's going to be in the offseason. It's much less likely to happen at the trade deadline, because there's just so many different moving parts, and subtracting from your NHL roster at the same time when you're trying to add, when you're gearing up toward a playoff push, when right wing is already a position where you feel like you're too thin. If you trade Kako, that is basically locking Blake Wheeler into a prominent spot in your lineup for the rest of the year. Now, obviously, if you trade him, I'm sure you're expecting to get some kind of a right winger back, whether it's in the same deal or in a separate deal. But still, that basically would leave you with whoever the new right winger is, Alexis Lafreniere and Blake Wheeler. And I don't know if we've seen enough from Blake Wheeler to say, absolutely, for your playoff push, he's a guy that you want locked into a top six or a top nine spot. So for all of those reasons, I believe that if they do explore trading Kako, just as I would say if they do explore trading any prominent piece from the roster, that is more likely to happen in the offseason. The other thing that I would caution everybody on here is this is smokescreen season. This is season when a lot of rumors are brewing. A lot of stuff is coming from a lot of different places, some of it a little bit more trustworthy than others. And I'm certainly not disputing Drager's report because, again, all he said is that the Rangers are listening, not that they are actively shopping. But remember, last year, we were hearing the same thing about Alexis Lafreniere. There were rumors being floated, not from me, but from others, that Alexis Lafreniere was on the trade block for the Rangers. And what happened? They went into the offseason, they had his RFA deal worked out, and he was re-signed, and now he's still on the team. I don't think the Rangers are anxious to give up on a lot of these young prospects who haven't popped in the way that they and fans and everybody else hoped that they would. Selling low on these guys is certainly not an ideal outcome. And again, that is what I think is happening here. I think teams are trying to see if they can buy low on him while his stock is diminishing. But the likelihood of that happening at this moment in time, unless it comes in a deal where the Rangers really feel like they're retaining multiple guys, multiple assets, guys with term who are going to impact them beyond the season, I certainly don't think it would be wise to trade Kako for a rental. I think any kind of a deal like that is going to be a guy who has some team control beyond the season and a guy who the Rangers feel like helps them in a top six or top nine type of role for their forwards beyond just the next few months. So if that type of a deal arises, then you can't rule anything out. Again, any good general manager is going to listen to any phone call he gets and listen on pretty much every player on their roster, especially when you feel like your roster right now is struggling and has some flaws and needs some help. But my thing on the Kako situation is that I would just be a little bit careful. I don't doubt the Drager report. I don't doubt that his name has been discussed among opposing teams or with opposing general managers, but the odds of that trade happening now, I think, are long unless the Rangers really lock in a trade that they feel really good about that's going to help them beyond just this season. And those deals are less rushed and I think much more likely if you look at the history of pretty much any team when it comes to trading significant young players on your roster. It's always more likely that that's going to happen in the summer than at the trade deadline. Because at the trade deadline, a team like the Rangers is looking to add. You're looking at your right wing position right now, and you're saying, we need some help at right wing. You're not saying, oh, we got to get rid of some right wingers because we have too many of them. I definitely sense that there is some level of disenchantment with the way that Kako is playing. And obviously the injury thing was a huge setback and him not being available. He's had a history of injuries. I'm sure that there's a certain level of, whether you want to call it frustration or disappointment there. But we were having, again, the same conversation about Alexis Lafreniere last year. And what ended up happening? None of those trades materialized and he was signed to a relatively team-friendly RFA deal, which is the same position that they're in with Kaapo Kakko right now. He's a guy that they can retain beyond this season without breaking the bank. And when you're talking about upside among the current right wingers in this organization, there's nobody who has the at least perceived upside that he has, even though it hasn't clicked. I'm not going to sit here and argue that it's clicked because it hasn't. But This is a guy who came off a long absence this season, has not really had a chance to get his feet under him and build any kind of consistency within the lineup this season. And I'm sure that that hasn't helped him either. So we'll see how it plays out. My final thought on this would be, I would be surprised if Kako was traded at this trade deadline. Not completely shocked, but definitely surprised. And if it does happen, I think it's more likely to happen in the offseason than it does now. But I also would be wary, because this is a time when a lot of different rumors are circulating out there, could be coming from a lot of different places, could be a smokescreen, could be a lot of different motivations behind it. But it seems like, if you look at the Rangers' history, if you look at the history of other teams, if you look at deals where it's involving highly touted young players trading hands, going back and forth, that is not all that common when it comes to a trade deadline deal. So that would be my final thought on that. All right, let's get to our next question, which goes to another player where we could probably say a lot of the same things about. This one comes from Ken Chu, who wrote, how much trade value does Keandre Miller have? So I would say a lot of the same things. Now, Keandre is under contract. The Rangers gave him an RFA deal over the summer. Obviously, you saw with the way that they negotiated that deal that they think pretty highly of him. This is a guy who is now under contract, I believe, for the next two seasons. So he's under contract for $3.8 million cap hit through the end of the 24-25 season. It's a guy who still, despite some of his inconsistencies recently, and that's what I think more of this is, because I know he's become a punching bag for Rangers fans recently. He's had some bad moments. He's had some glaring mistakes. That comes with it with this player. You're hoping that over time he diminishes that. There are way fewer of those. And I think that when they do happen, it tends to become this thing that sort of feeds itself on social media, especially as those clips circulate and all that. But it's also a guy who has had some really good moments for the Rangers, who shoulders a ton of responsibility for them. Last I checked, second on the team in average time on ice per game. Peter Laviolette obviously trusts him a lot, because even though he shook up some of those defensive pairs right before the break, the one that he didn't touch was Trouba Miller. Their goals against has been way up during this two-month stretch when the Rangers have, as a team, played much looser defensive hockey. You look at their first couple months, they were really good. They, as far as especially goals allowed, which was a big problem for them last year, they ranked as one of the worst defensive pairs in the league in terms of how many goals they were on ice for that the opposing team scored. This year, the first couple months, they were grading out really well there, and now that's taken a big hit in the last couple months. But Laviolette always makes the point, and we've talked about this before, it is a pretty fair point, that they draw the toughest assignments. They're on ice at 5-on-5 more than any other defensive pair. They're the ones that are going against the best forwards on the opposing team, and it stands to logic that they are going to be the ones who get burned probably more than your third pair, which is playing against the bottom six for the opposing team and playing far fewer minutes. So I think we fixate on them a little bit. And I do think that when you look at some of the plays that Miller is capable of making, it is a lot of reason to bet on his future, to believe that there is still a good player there. And clearly, you look at the contract the Rangers gave him last summer, they believe that as well. If you were to shop him, I think there would be a lot of interest around the league. But again, same thing I'm saying with Kako. I do not see that being the kind of deal that is going to happen in the trade deadline situation. And you look at the Rangers' situation on defense, Lindgren, Schneider, and Erik Gustafsson are all going to be free agents this summer. Miller is the only left-handed defenseman of their top six who's under contract for next season. So to think that they're going to turn around and trade that guy in this moment, I find that to be pretty unlikely. So that's what I would say on that. I agree that there is some warranted criticism with him. I do think, again, there have been some pretty glaring mistakes, and you'd like to see that pair in particular tighten up. But I also feel like he's just one of those guys who, for some reason, we could speculate on what some of those reasons might be, but he's become a guy who seems to almost shoulder an unfair share of criticism from fans when there's, in my opinion, if you watch the way this team has played in the last couple of months, a lot of blame to go around, including from the guy who plays behind Miller, the guy in goal. So that would be my final thought on that. All right, let's get to our next question, which comes from LB Key, who wrote, which prospect do you think the Rangers are most willing to part ways with at the deadline should the opportunity for a big ticket deal present itself? I feel like Hoffman is really the only guy that the Rangers will say is off limits. So I would say that the two guys the Rangers would be the most hard pressed to deal are not only Brendan Hoffman, but Gabe Perreault. I think Gabe Perreault is probably even going to be harder to pry away from the Rangers. I think the feeling around the league is that he is their number one prospect right now. And you see the way that he not only is lighting it up for BC, but went and won a gold medal with Team USA at the World Juniors and was really a standout player on that very talented roster. So Perreault and Hoffman are the guys that I think would be hardest for the Rangers to part with. I do think some of the prospects a notch below them, the Rangers would be willing to discuss them. But I also think this, if you look at Chris Drury's history, especially his history at the trade deadline, he is much more willing to deal draft picks than he is prospects. And I've heard this from a couple sources over the years where the Rangers, I think, tend to value especially their own top prospects, guys that they've had some time to roll up their sleeves and work with and get to know and see their development and project what they might turn into, and especially guys that are getting close to being ready to impact the NHL roster, guys like a Brendan Hoffman. I think they find those harder to part with than they do draft picks, because draft picks, they're at a point where you don't know where you're going to be picking in the draft. You don't know who's going to be available at that point. You don't know what they're going to turn into. So you look at the history of Chris Drury's trade deadline deals, it's almost always been draft picks and very rarely been prospects. And you look at this upcoming year, the Rangers aren't flushed with draft picks by any means, but they do have a first, they do have a second, they also have a fourth, a fifth, and a sixth. So those middle round draft picks, that 4, 5, 6, I'm sure are very much on the table. And in the right deal, I think either the 1 or the 2 could be on the table. And really, I think what I would be on high alert for is what we've seen Chris Drury do in the past, and that is a conditional pick. Knowing the Rangers have both their second and their first round draft pick this year, it would not surprise me in the slightest to see him work out a deal where it's a conditional second round draft pick that could elevate to a first if the Rangers accomplish X. We saw them do that with Andrew Kopp a couple of years ago, where if the Rangers made the Eastern Conference final, the pick that they traded to go and get Kopp from the Winnipeg Jets went from a second to a first. That, I think, would be something that I would very much think could be discussed in a potential trade for the Rangers, a conditional type of a thing like that. So the prospects, again, mid-level prospects, especially some of the guys who are getting to the point where it doesn't look like they have much of a future here, let's say a guy like Matthew Robertson, that I think would be something they would absolutely entertain. But I would say my gut is you're probably going to see them shop the draft picks a little bit more than they do the prospects, especially the top prospects. But you never know. Obviously, if a big impact player, especially a player with some term, comes along, maybe they would be willing to discuss one of the bigger name prospects, because I think, you know, they're at a point now where, as we talked about earlier, they're absolutely trying to go for it. All right, let's try to fit in a couple more here. Let's get to one from, let's see. We have Corvats, who wrote, or Kyle Corvats, who wrote a couple different questions in here. Would Max Domi make sense as a third line center solution for 24-25? Maybe. We're not going to go too deep into 24-25. I certainly don't think the Maple Leafs are trading him at this year's deadline. Lindgren, how much do you think the Rangers would be willing to re-sign him for? That's an excellent question. That's going to be a really big topic looking ahead to the summer, especially as you project their cap space. Lindgren's going to be a really tough call for the Rangers because he's so loved in that locker room. He brings a lot of those toughness elements that we believe that the Rangers want to infuse more of into their lineup. But you also wonder with the style that he plays and the frequency with which he gets injured, not a huge player for as big as he seems to play. He's a guy who is under 6 foot and definitely puts his body in harm's way a lot. And you wonder what kind of effect that will have him on him over the years, I should say, the same way that we saw with defensemen in the past, whether it's Ryan McDonagh, Dan Girardi, some of these guys that have just been so rugged and so important to the Rangers when they've had some of their playoff runs in the past, but wore down at younger ages. So that's got to be part of the conversation for Lindgren, no doubt about it. But as I mentioned before, Miller is the only left-handed defenseman among their top six right now who's under contract for next year. So between Gustafsson and Lindgren, you assume they have to bring back at least one, maybe both of them. But the price tag, I don't think they're going to want to go a whole lot higher than what they're paying him right now at $3 million a year. Maybe you stretch it up to four, but I think beyond that would be a tough pill for them to swallow. And I also wonder how long-term they would go. Will it be another 2-3, maybe 4-year deal as opposed to going a full 5-6-7? I don't know if they'd want to go super long-term in that situation. Last question here is, what would it cost the Rangers to get Adam Henrique at 50% retained plus Frank Vetrano from the Ducks? Well, listen, I told you before the Rangers have $5.2 million in available salary cap space is what the projection is right now. Henrique at 50% is about $2.9 million and Vetrano is $3.6 million. So that puts you up to 6.5. That's well above 5.2. So that's not feasible for them to do this year unless they're sending other salary back, unless maybe they entertain a guy like Kaapo Kakko in a deal like that because they think Vetrano can be a multi-year fix at right wing. I guess it's not the craziest thing that I've heard, but financially, unless you're sending significant salary back, that simply doesn't work. So that one is probably a little harder to pull off. Because I don't think the Ducks are doing that deal for a guy like Barclay Gaudreau. I think the Ducks would definitely consider that deal if you're putting Kaapo Kakko in it. But is that something that you're willing to do? You're basically, for next season at least, trading Kakko for Vetrano. And Vetrano's only under contract for one more year and significantly older. So a little bit of a tough one to swallow there. But like I said, I guess I have heard crazier things. All right, let's get to our next question here. I'm going to try to go a little more rapid fire. Eric Talvey wrote, Rangers fans love reacquiring former Rangers. That's for sure. We just talked about Vetrano. Now there's more cap free. Can you see Pavel Buchnevich targeted? He's signed through next year at a reasonable cap hit, can play center this year and next year if Hedl is still out or not, I guess you would slide him in with Zibanejad and Kreider. Not sure trade cost, but worth investigating. I got to tell you, of all the guys that have been floated out there, the former Rangers that people want to talk about, whether it's Vetrano, whether it's Vladimir Tarasenko, whether it's Buchnevich, I think Buchnevich is probably the one that is least likely. I didn't get the sense that there was a whole lot of love lost between him and the front office at the time that he was traded. He's at, I think it's a $5.8 million cap hit, which is a little bit more than I think the Rangers could stomach taking on for next season unless St. Louis retains some of that salary, which I'm not sure about their willingness to do that. I just don't think that that's a road the Rangers are going to go down on. I think it's a little bit of a sore subject, that trade, quite frankly. That's been a big point of criticism as far as the lack of really quality return that the Rangers got in Sammy Blais, and I think it was a second round pick for Buchnevich a few years ago. I just don't think they're going to go down that road. So Buchnevich to me is a long shot. I think Tarasenko is a little bit more feasible, and even Vetrano is probably a little bit more feasible than them bringing Buch back for a variety of reasons, the salary being one of them, and just the fact that I don't think that that's a road that the Rangers, or maybe even Buchnevich, would necessarily want to go down. All right, next question comes from, let's see, Joseph, who wrote, the Rangers have been rumored to be interested in Jacob Chychrun from the Ottawa Senators, of course, before, and he's reportedly on the block. What are the odds we see the Rangers involved here? I don't want to move Kako or Keandre, but I imagine if they get Chychrun and Tarasenko, you'd have to listen. Maybe include Lindgren instead. Listen, I don't think that the Rangers feel like they need to add a defenseman at this deadline. I think, contrary to maybe some belief out there among the fans, that they are comfortable with their top six defensemen. I don't think they're looking to move any of those six out of the lineup. I think the Eric Gustafson signing has worked out really well for them, a very cost-effective signing, probably their best signing of the offseason. I would argue it's neck and neck with him and Jonathan Quick, but because Gustafson plays every game, I would argue that he has been their best signing in that slew of sort of veterans that were coming in around $800,000 over the summer. So Gustafson, I think they're very happy with what they're getting from him. You know, Laviolette thinks really highly of him. I don't think, contrary to maybe some popular belief, that they are shopping Keandre Miller around right now. Trouba still has a no-movement clause. He's not going anywhere. Obviously, Adam Fox isn't going anywhere. I don't think they're looking at an in-season trade for Ryan Lindgren. And I also don't sense that they're motivated to move Braden Schneider out of the lineup right now. So I'm not sure, if you're talking about adding a defenseman of that top six, who you move out there. The one thing that I will say is if they were to target a defenseman, as we've touched on a little bit here, three of those top six from this season are not under contract for next season. So they will be looking at needing to bring in new defensemen or re-sign the ones that they have this offseason. So maybe if there is an enticing opportunity out there to add a defenseman who you feel like can contribute beyond the season, a guy with term, a guy who can replace maybe one of those outgoing free agents. I believe the only outgoing one for sure would be Gustafson, because he'll be an unrestricted free agent. Schneider is not an unrestricted free agent, nor does he have arbitration rights. And Lindgren is a restricted free agent with arbitration rights. So Lindgren and Schneider are still under team control beyond this season. They just need new contracts. Gustafson is the one guy who is not. So my full circle answer on this would be, I don't think they're shopping for a defenseman. I think center, number one, clearly, maybe even two centers is their top priority. Right wing would be their number two priority. And if they were to go for a defenseman, I think it would have to be someone with some term who would fill a need for them beyond the season. But I think that they are content to move forward with the top six that they have in-house right now. All right, I think we're going to do, like, honestly, one more, and maybe one that doesn't have to do with the trade deadline, which comes from Big Lou, who wrote at the top of his question that he's trying to give me a non-trade deadline question, so I appreciate that. And this is probably a good topic to wrap up on here. Is there a scenario in which the Rangers would consider more of a 50-50 split between Quick and Igor? And this is a question that I've been asked a couple times recently. And while I think that Jonathan Quick's play has warranted a larger share of the workload, I believe that the Rangers internally feel this way, and it also makes sense from a big picture perspective that the best thing for this team, the most important thing for this team, if we are going to look at them as a legitimate contender, we talk about all of these flaws. We talk about defending against the rush, 5-on-5 scoring, etc. But if the Rangers get Igor Shesterkin back to the level where we know Igor Shesterkin can play, that has to be the number one difference maker, the number one thing that will affect the Rangers' chances of having playoff success. Because we know what a hot goalie can do in the playoffs, and we know that Igor Shesterkin has a history of playing really well in the playoffs. The concerns are very real right now. I think more real than at any previous point since he has joined the Rangers 5 years ago, because we're more than halfway through the season right now, and this guy is sitting there with an .899 save percentage. I just can't get over when you look at his numbers. His analytics as well are in the negatives for the first time ever since he has been an NHL goalie, because there were even points when he was going through some stuff and maybe the save percentage or the record didn't look great, but you could still look at the analytics and say, well, he's facing a really heavy workload right now, and all things considered, he's still doing all right. But recently, the increasing trend with the Rangers, I believe it is 12 times in the last 14 games they've outshot their opponent, yet they've only won 5 of those games. So you're consistently having these games where the Rangers are having the advantage in possession. They're having the advantage in scoring chances. They're having the advantage in shots on goal, and yet they're still losing. And yes, a big part of that is, as many of the players on the team and Peter Laviolette have pointed out, the quality of the chances that they're allowing are too good. They're allowing odd man rushes. They're having breakdowns in front of the net. They're turning the puck over in very inopportune situations that are then putting them on their heels and giving the other team really hard quality looks coming back the other way. So all of those things are true. They have absolutely hung their goalies out to dry at really costly times in the last couple of months. But we've had these games where Igor is facing 19, 20, 21 shots and allowing goals on 3, 4, or 5 of them. And simply put, that is not going to cut it. We've been spoiled by him. We're used to him bailing them out in a lot of those spots where the Rangers leave him in a bad position and then he makes some miraculous save. But for this team to be at their best, he has to be making some of those saves. That's the reality. And he is not making enough of those difficult saves recently, really for a large portion of the season now. So the concerns are legitimate. And my biggest thing, as I've talked about before with him, is it just seems like he beats himself up so much. He gets in his own head so much. We wouldn't know a whole lot about it because, quite frankly, he does not talk to the media a whole lot. I think he lets his own frustrations fester so much that he sort of sulks and storms out of the locker room. And you could just see that he wears this stuff and it doesn't seem all that healthy to me. But we've also seen him work his way out of this. Last season, think back, there was an extended stretch of time where Igor was struggling. It was the number one topic of conversation around this team. And then what happened in the last month, month and a half of the season? All of a sudden, he snapped out of it. He caught fire. And to me, in that first round series against the Devils, he was the best player on either side. That series doesn't even come close to going 7 games if it's not for Igor Shesterkin. So I believe that history tells us that he is absolutely capable of coming out of this and getting hot again. I do not think this is a guy who now for the rest of the season or for the rest of his career is going to be a sub 900 save percentage goalie. He's got to come up from this. He might not be able to get back to that level of 935, that Vezina Trophy winning level that we saw a few years ago. That might be hard for any goalie to do. It certainly, I think, would be hard for any goalie to do. But you got to believe at some point he's going to be better than some of these bad games that we've seen recently. He had a couple toward the end of the All-Star break where you thought you saw signs of life. You felt like he played much better in a couple of those games, and then he would have a dud. So it's been obviously far too up and down, but Igor is the biggest key for the Rangers moving forward. And that is sort of my long-winded way of saying that the reason I think the Rangers are going to continue to ride him is because getting him right, sorting this out, is critically important for this team. So in the short term, if you are just focused on we got to win today, you could make an argument that Jonathan Quick may, at this very moment, give the Rangers a better chance to win on a given night than Igor Shesterkin does. But the Rangers are still fairly comfortable in playoff position. They haven't plummeted in the standings to this point. And what we've seen, even with Igor going through some of these struggles recently, is that Peter Laviolette is still leaning on Shesterkin. He's still only playing Quick about once a week. So maybe coming out of the break, especially if you're trying to give Igor a little bit of a reset, a little bit of a mental break, could we see Quick get a few more starts? That's possible. I think that would be reasonable. But I think for the most part, in these final 30-plus games that it is that the Rangers have in the regular season, they need to find a way to get Igor Shesterkin right. And I believe that they feel this way, and I think that this is absolutely what Igor would want, is to let him play through it, let him figure it out. And the only way that he's going to conquer this, the only way that he's going to start feeling like himself again, is if he starts stacking some good games. So I think they're going to give him every opportunity to do that. And I think that if we are thinking about the playoffs, which they are absolutely doing, that they know that their best chance for playoff success, obviously you're going to have to fortify the roster. You're going to have to make the right trade deadline decisions. We just spent a lot of time talking about all that stuff. That's all important. Obviously, they're going to have to clean up some of the areas where we've seen their game slip. And there are a few of those areas for sure from a team standpoint right now. But at the top of all this list, a lot of that stuff comes secondary, you could argue, to getting back to having one of the best goalies in the league. Because if you have one of the best goalies in the league, if you have the guy that we've seen for the better part of four seasons now, who can be the difference between winning and losing on a lot of nights, well, that is certainly going to change the way that you feel about this team going into the playoffs. So for that reason, that is why I believe that the Rangers are not going to all of a sudden start playing him significantly less or make him the backup. I don't think making him the backup is in the cards. And I really don't think that they're going to all of a sudden start playing him half the time like you hinted at here, Lou. 50-50 is not what I see. Again, coming out of the break, maybe you see Quick get a few more starts if they're looking to give Igor a chance to catch his breath a little bit more, maybe get some extra work behind the scenes with goaltending coach Benoit Allaire, who always seems to find a way to navigate him out of these trouble stretches. But ultimately, I think he's in a play. I think he's in a play a lot. And I think that the Rangers are banking on, at some point, him snapping out of this and that being a critical part of what they hope will be a successful playoff run. All right, that's it. I'm throwing in the towel. There's a lot more questions in here. I'm sorry if I didn't get to yours. There's certainly some good other topics that I would have liked to address. I think we very much got bogged down with the trade deadline stuff, but I get it. The hot stove is burning right now, and it's certainly going to be something we talk about more in the coming weeks. But for now, I got to go get a sip of water or something. I'm sweating. This is probably the longest one segment I've taped all season, but it was worth it. It was fun. I hope you guys got a lot of your number one questions on your mind answered. I will be back next week once we have hockey starting back up again and we have the second half of the season to look forward to and see how the Rangers play. Where do they make fixes? Where do they make changes? What do they do at the trade deadline? A lot of exciting stuff coming up. But for now, I'm going to try to enjoy the rest of my week of a little bit of relaxing, spending some quality time with the family. This has been nice these first couple days so far. I will have a few pieces of new content coming your way, but I hope you guys are also taking this opportunity to decompress a little bit and enjoy yourselves a little bit and look forward to what you hope will be some exciting hockey down the stretch. It's not all doom and gloom. There have certainly been a lot of things that we haven't liked that you're concerned about moving forward, but you're still looking at a first place team. You're still looking at a team that is in position to probably make some pretty exciting additions at the trade deadline and a team that is almost surely heading back to the playoffs. And you never know what can happen once you get in the dance. So with that, I will bid you all adieu. I will thank you all once again, and I will talk to you all next week.